All right. Sarah, you don't have to be in Chayram. We're all friends here. Okay. So this morning's Parsha. First of all, I hope everyone's doing well. Thank God the community hasn't fallen apart yet.
You're very fortunate.
Why?
Because you have quality, not necessarily quantity.
That's okay. That's why we're recording it.
Okay.
So we actually have a great opportunity this morning, because we Parshas Chukas is oftentimes joined with the next Parsha, which is Parshas Balak. And for some reason, I always feel like Balak overshadows Chukas. I don't know why, but that's why I feel that way. Maybe I have an inferiority complex, because Chukas is my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. So I always like for it to, when it stands alone, because you actually get to discuss it. If you ask me what I spoke about in my Bar Mitzvah, I have no idea. My parents wrote it. I read it, and I haven't seen it since.
Time for another bar mitzvah.
Exactly. You'll get a bar mitzvah speech this Shabbos. I'm saying I'll speak my bar mitzvah speech. Okay. So what I want to do, as you know, my style sometimes a little bit different than Rabbi Goldberg's. And what I want to do is try to make sense of different episodes of this week's parsha. And in particularly, I want to start at the beginning of Perek Chaf. Perek 20, which is on page 842 in the Art Scroll. And really, the whole, up until that point, the first aliyah and a half of the Parsha, morning, the first aliyah and a half of the Parsha is talking about the Parah Aduma. I don't want to talk about this morning. We end talking about the Parah Aduma, and then it gets into some meaty stories. A lot happens in this week's Parsha. People don't realize it. Miriam dies. Aaron dies. Right, there's a tremendous amount that's taken place. Okay, so what I want to do is pick up. Oh, and by the way, Moshe sins and is told that he can't go into the land of Israel. So those are like major events in Jewish history taking place in this week's parsha. So Perek 20 opens up the following. And I just want to read six psukim and then we'll discuss a little bit. Vayavo b'nei Yisrael kol ha'idam midbart sin b'chodesh harishon. So the Jewish people, the whole assembly, arrived in the wilderness of Sin in the first month. And they settle there. Miriam dies, and she's buried. Immediately the next pasuk, immediately the Jewish people, they don't waste a minute. They gang up on Moshe and Aaron, and they say, the third pasuk, they say to him, wouldn't it have been better if we had died with our brothers? Why'd you bother bringing us out into the wilderness so that we could die there? We're on Chaf, Perek 20, the fifth pasuk now. Okay, so again, Miriam dies. The Jewish people don't even waste a minute. They immediately attack Moshe and Aaron, saying, why is God doing this to us? We're out of water, we're thirsty. Pasuk 5, hey. Why did he take us out of the greatness of Egypt, right? Revisionist history. Into this place where we're going to die. There are none of these delicious fruits and vegetables that we're so accustomed to, and there's no water to drink. Next pasuk ends with Moshe and Aaron. They bowed, they fall on their face to God. Basically, we give up God. We don't know what to do. Okay? That's that episode. So Miriam dies, the Jewish people come, they accost Moshe and Aaron, saying, why is it that there's no water here? We want to basically go back to Egypt. Immediately the next pasuk, Zion, so Perek 20, the seventh pasuk. Vayedaber Adonai Moshe l'emor, Hashem tells Moshe, kach et hamateh, take your stick, v'hakel es ha'ida, and gather the people, atah v'aron achicha, v'dibartem el ha'sela. And we have the episode of Mei Merivah. Again, what happens at Mei Merivah? Hashem tells them to speak to the rock. Moshe hits the rock, whatever the exact sin was. And Moshe is told he can't go into Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Now, a lot happens in a very short period of time. In those, I'd say, 12, 11, 10 psukim. Those 12 psukim. A lot happens. Miriam dies. The Jewish people complain. Hashem listens to their complaints and said, I'm going to give you water. And Moshe blows it. And eventually he's told that you can't go into Eretz Yisrael. And then the story immediately shifts to a different thing.
Is his punishment, do the rabbi say his punishment is commensurate with his sin?
So again, whatever, we don't know what a sin is yet. Right? One of the commentators has a great line. Moshe sinned once, but we attribute it to him like 40 sins. He only sinned once. But according to one guy, he got angry. According to one guy, he took it into his... And everyone has their own explanation of what Moshe did wrong.
Even with all of those explanations, he hit it, he yelled. Is the punishment commensurate?
Well, you can't answer that until you know what the sin is.
Okay.
In other words, if I rob a convenience store, if I murder someone, the punishment's going to be different. So without knowing what Moshe's sin was, you can't really know what his punishment is and whether it's commensurate with...
Even so, you're still... Moshe Rabbeinu was the leader. He has to be accountable for everything he does, more so than the people. So I think that sin was apropos to...
Okay, again, we'll get to the sin. I'm going to offer a revolutionary suggestion for what the sin is. I guarantee you never heard it, and it may even be kfira, but that's what makes it fun. Heresy. Okay? Then I want to read two more.
Do we have some stones?
two more.
They already renewed your contract.
Exactly. A few more psukim I want to read. If you go to Perek Chaf now, pasuk 22. So in the art scroll, it's on page 846, on the bottom. Again, the 20th Perek Chaf, pasuk Chaf Beis. I'll give people a chance to find it. We now come to the death of Aaron. You know what, let's skip all that. Go to 29, right at the end of that parak. Okay, so you'll turn the page in the art scroll. So Aaron dies, Hashem tells him to go up to the mountain. There's this whole beautiful procedure where he transfers the kahuna to his son. Very nice. And then pasuk 29. Again, top of page 848. Vayiru kol aidaki gava Aaron. The entire Jewish people see that Aaron perished. Vayibchu es Aaron shloshim yom, and they mourn for Aaron. They cry for Aaron 30 days. Kol Beis Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. Okay. Now let's get to the questions part. I have a number of questions. Number one is the contrast between Miriam's death and Aaron's death is striking. First of all, Miriam's death takes up a total of one pasuk in the Torah. Not only that, you do not see the Jewish people mourn Miriam at all. She dies, and the Jewish people, it doesn't even say they mourn, they cry, nothing. Bam, immediately they're into complaining. Okay? By Aaron, there's this whole prolonged, beautiful procedure of how he dies. And then once he dies, the Jewish people react the way many of us would react when one of our leaders dies, which is that they're devastated. 30 days, they don't move. They're mourning. They're incapacitated by the loss of their leader. So question number one is the difference in the mourning between Miriam and Aaron. Okay? Now parenthetically, Miriam gets ripped off throughout the Torah in my mind. Okay? This is not a feminist comment. It's just, it happens to be true. Miriam's name is mentioned a total of 4 or 5 times in the Torah. For someone who we think plays such an integral role in the development of the Jewish people, she's hardly mentioned. So some people would say, okay, so it's fitting that in her death, she gets one pasuk and done with you. I don't believe that. I think there's a significance to why it's only one pasuk and why specifically the Jewish people don't mourn. Okay, so question number one is why isn't Miriam mourned? Okay, one pasuk for a death, and then the Jewish people are off and running complaining. They don't even care about it. It almost seems harsh. Right, or soulless, that the Jewish people don't mourn. Question number two is to explain the proximity of Miriam's death to Moshe's sin at Meimriva. Again, we read it. Miriam dies, the Jewish people complain, and then Moshe blows it. He hits the rock instead of speaking to it, and God says he can't go into Israel. What's the significance of those two happening in such close proximity to each other? Now you might tell me, Rabbi Moskowitz, you think Miriam got to decide when she was going to die? She died when she died. The Torah recorded it. I don't believe it. And I'll tell you why. Because we'll read in Rashi in a second that it's a Gemara already, that a few people weren't owned, they weren't controlled by the angel of death, and Miriam was one of those people. In other words, She didn't die because it was her time. She died because God wanted her to die at this time. Once we know that God wanted her to die at this time, we have to figure out why God wanted her to die at this time and why it's significant that the Torah recorded it in such close proximity to the sin of Mei Meriva. Okay? So let's read a few Rashis. If you look now at Rashi at the beginning of Pasuk of Perachav, first Rashi in the beginning of the 20th parak. Rashi tells us, Kol Ha'ida, Eida Shlema. Why does it refer to it as the entire assembly? Sorry, I'll give people a second. Kol Ha'ida, Eida Shlema. It's to tell us that it's the entire Jewish people. Why? Shekvar Mesu, Mese Midbar, Ve'elu Parshu L'chaim. Rashi tells us that between the 19th chapter and the 20th chapter, 39 years pass, or 38 years pass.
Sorry, could you say that again? I missed it.
Between the end of the 19th chapter and the beginning of the 20th chapter, the entire middle, we miss. We skip over 38 years of Jewish history. Okay? So we go from the first year in the Midbar to the last year in the Midbar. In the interim, everyone dies. And what you have now is the generation, a new generation, that's going to go into the land of Israel. Now, on a number of levels, that's very significant because it means that this is the generation, our Parsha is that transition point from get out of the wilderness mindset into the mindset of you're going into the land of Israel. And it could be, that's not what we'll talk about, but it could be that factors into why Moshe's sin was so egregious. Because here he finally had the chance to educate the generation that was going to Israel, and he had to educate them properly, and he blew the opportunity. In fact, that's what the Netziv says. The Netziv says that Moshe's sin was that Mei Meriva, the sin of the water, was that he was supposed to train the people away from miracles. And in fact, what Moshe was supposed to do with them is daven for water to come. In other words, they weren't supposed to rely on a miracle. Moshe was supposed to sit there with the Jewish people the same way when we have a drought, we daven. Moshe was supposed to train them how to daven to God, that he should do something for them. When he hit the rock and the water came out, the Jewish people said, "Oh, great. We're going to continue on our way of miracles. It's going to continue into the land of Israel." God said, "Moshe, clearly you can't be the leader who's going to take them because there's a new world order going on now." Okay? And therefore, that requires a new form of leadership. That's what the Netziv says. But regardless, we just missed 38 years of Jewish history. We went from the first year in the wilderness to the last year in the wilderness. Okay, the next Rashi. But Tamot Sham Miriam. Miriam dies. Lama Nismecha Mita Miriam Leparshas Para Aduma. Rashi is telling us, why does Miriam's death happen here? This is according to Rashi. Lo mar lecha ma korbanos mechaprin af misa sadikim mechaperes. Just as a korban, a sacrifice, can atone for a sin, so too the death of a righteous person can atone for a sin. That's Rashi's explanation for why Miriam's death is put where it is. Okay? In the last Rashi I want to read, the next Rashi, v'lo hayamayim la'ida, and there was no water for the congregation. Mikan, from here we learn, Shekol Arbim Shana Hayelhem Abe'er Bishut Miriam. That for the entire 40 years, the Jewish people had water in the merit of Miriam. Why does Rashi have to tell me that? Again, Rashi's answering our questions. Rashi's explaining why Miriam's death is recorded where it is. It's recorded where it is because before it talks about the Para Aduma, which atones for sins, so too Miriam's death atones for sins. That's why it's here. Also why it's here is to show us that right afterwards, when the Jewish people start complaining about water, you know why they start complaining about water now? It's because the whole time Miriam was alive, they had the well. Now that Miriam's dead, the Jewish people start panicking, they don't have water anymore, and that leads to the sins. Okay, that's how Rashi basically interprets this whole episode. Obviously it's Rashi, and Rashi is our greatest Torah commentator. I don't think it explains the brevity of Miriam's death. Okay? I also don't think it explains why the Jewish people don't mourn Miriam's death. And so what I want to do is offer a revolutionary, radical, get thrown into the heresy camp explanation this morning. Yeah, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. Those are our questions. Any questions, comments before we go on? Everyone understands? Okay, good. In order to answer all of our questions, we're going to turn to a different episode, one that we have not seen yet, and try to analyze that. If you turn in Art Scroll, it's on page 852. And if you're following along in a different version, it's Perek Chaf Aleph, Perek 21, verse 17. Okay? So again, page 852 in the Art Scroll, 21:17. The Jewish people, they had a couple of wars, there's a whole business with Edom. Okay, very nice, Amalek comes, all of these things happen. And then the Jewish people sing a song. Okay? And the pasuk says, Az Yashir Yisrael et Ashirazot. The Jewish people sing this song, Alei Ve'er Enula. Come up, O well, call out to it. Be'er chafaru asarim, well that the prince dug, the mo, da 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 da. All that, you can read it in English while I'm talking, okay? The Jewish people sing a song, so to speak, to the well. Okay? Now, my guess is this probably isn't unheard of. There was a miracle, they wanted to sing a song about it. But there are a number of astounding things about it. What's astounding about it? Good. What does that remind you of?
It reminds me of the Shira.
Good. It reminds you of the Shira, the song that they sang at the splitting of the sea. Perfect. And I think it's supposed to remind you of that. Now that we have that connection, compare the two of them for me. How does this compare to the Shira Tayan?
Shira?
Yeah. How do these two songs differ?
There is no song.
Well, there is. It's just...
It just says.
Well, it does. It says, Alei ve'er anula, be'er chafarua. Those are the lyrics. Okay? Compare stylistically. So I'll tell you, there are a number of differences. Okay? There are a number of differences. Number one is that the Shira of the... And we're going to read this all in a source in a second. The Shira, the song that they sang coming out of Egypt, was immediately after coming out of Egypt. Okay? This song... praising God for giving them the well happens long after they've already had the well. If anything, they now sing it once they've lost the well, which might be significant. Okay? One was immediately afterwards, one was a long time afterwards. What's another difference? Let me ask you a question. If you were writing a book of famous songs, Jewish songs, so if you had to pick which one was going to go in that book of famous Jewish songs, which one do you think would go in it?
The first one.
The first one, right? Song at the Red Sea, we sing that every morning. We stand up for it when it's read in shul. We make a big hoopla about it. My guess is 95% of the Jewish people don't even know that this song exists in the Torah. So one is extremely well known, and one is not well known at all. Okay? What else is the difference between them? Along those lines, the song at the sea is the centerfold of the Parsha. Parsha Bishalach. That is the Parsha. It's synonymous with each other. Here, this song is an afterthought.
Shabbos is called Shabbos Shira.
What?
And the Shabbos
is called Shabbos Shira, exactly. The song of the Shabbos of the song. This, again, it's an afterthought, even within the Parsha. Forget that no one knows about it. Even within the Parsha, it's a small blip on the map of the storyline in the Parsha. What else do we notice? Well, let's compare the words. Okay, I'm going to start... You follow along in Parsha Chukat, follow along in the Chumash, and I'm going to read for you the song from Bishalach. Az, so far so good. Tell me when I make a mistake. Yashir, Moshe,
Yisroel.
Right? One of them, Moshe, is leading the song. Here, Moshe doesn't lead the song. It's more than that. I can continue. Moshe is not found anywhere near the song. So in the song that we read in Bishalach, Moshe is the centerpiece. He sings it. He leads them. Miriam leads them, right? It's a very top-heavy type of song. And here, it's a song sung by the Jewish people. Moshe's absence is striking. Okay? Those are our questions. So you see that they're similar but different. You immediately picked up on the Az Yashir Ah. There must be a connection between the two of them. But the answer is that we're comparing apples and oranges. Let's read now. If you take the sheet that I gave you, This is by an article written by a rabbi in Israel named Rav Yehuda Shaviv. It's written in his book, Misinai Va. Sorry. Okay? And he makes a lot of these comparisons. And I want to read them and then explain why I think this all is very important to answering our first questions. I'm going to read it. Don't worry about the Hebrew. I'll translate everything, obviously. He's basically going to be saying a lot of what we said inside. Right at the top on the right-hand column, he says, "Shtei shirot heim shehushru al amayim." There were two songs that were sung at the sea. Rishona umeforeset, he shirat hayam. The first one, which is the more popular one, is the shirat hayam that we read in Parsha B'Shalach. Shnia, the second one, he mitzdanet, la b'parsha teinu. It's hidden in our parsha, shirat ha-be'er. Okay. Rishona nishma b'samach li'tzias Mitzrayim. The first one is in close proximity to the Exodus from Egypt. Shnia b'samach l'knisasam la'aretz. And the second one is close to them entering into the land of Israel. Rishona I can't even read that. Mitzuya b'merkaza shel parshat b'shalach. The first one is the center of the parsha. Shnia netuna esham b'shulei parshasenu. It's the outskirts, right? It's barely mentioned. Again, his comparisons. Why is Moshe absent? So there are a number of explanations. If you look down, the next paragraph, he says, "Zoshal Yam pasach b'Moshe v'itzdarfu ala b'nei Yisrael." As we pointed out, the one at the sea, Moshe participated in the song. Kamor az yashir Moshe b'nei Yisrael tashir azot. V'ilu zoshal be'er sharu b'nei Yisrael levadam. Whereas that which was sung here, it was just the Jewish people, Kamur, as the Pasuk says, Asher Yisrael at Tishirazo. Madua lo itzdarif mehem Moshe. Why was Moshe absent from this song? And he's going to offer four explanations. One of which I find extremely significant. I find them all significant. One of which I find extremely significant. Number one, Kvar amdu al kach balei amidrash v'amru, mimnei ma lo niskar Moshe sham. Why wasn't Moshe? I think Art Scroll maybe even quotes this midrash. Yeah, Art Scroll quotes this midrash. Why is Moshe absent? Mimnei shenenash al hamayim. It's obvious. Moshe just got punished because of water. So now all of a sudden the Jewish people are saying, "Water, how great you are." That's like taking a knife, dinging it into Moshe's stomach, and turn it around a little bit, right? Moshe, we're going to spit in your face and we're going to shove it in your face that this water that is going to make you not allowed to come into Israel, we think is so great we're praising God for. So Moshe says, "Leave me out of this one, guys. Right? I'll join you for the next song." And that's one explanation. Three more explanations that we won't read inside, because I don't want to... Actually, there are more explanations. The Rashbam says why... This is also why the Jewish people hesitated to sing. The Rashbam says this is why the Jewish people sang so... They waited, right? There's a wait after Miriam dies, Moshe sins, to this song. Because the Jewish people were hesitant to sing. They were... Should I sing? Should I not sing? It's a little bit awkward. Moshe was just punished by it. And the Medrash also says this is why Hashem's name is not mentioned in the song. You don't find Hashem's name written in the song. And the Medrash says that's because God says at a deference to Moshe, if Moshe was punished by the water, I don't want to be in the song anyways. Okay, so you see, reason number one more has to do with the fact that Moshe was punished by it. And therefore, leave him out of it. Reason number two, very simply, if you look on the top of the next column, he says, "V'ilu v'ulai." The top line, "Mitam nosaf lo shar Moshe." Maybe another reason, "Shira tabeir ba be'akvut b'kiyat amayim." V'ilu ba'ku be'akvut atzama. Right. This comes after the famine. V'atzama lo ira el b'samach lihistal kucha shel Miriam. And the famine comes after Miriam dies. So they're all connected to each other. He says, "V'ketzad yachol." This is the underline. "Moshe lashir v'hu avel achosa bechira." How can Moshe be singing? He's mourning the loss of his sister. Now, what makes that significant, right? Is that what did I say? I noticed that no one was mourning Miriam. Okay. According to this explanation, maybe Moshe, there was some mourning going on. Now, Moshe, it wasn't as easy for Moshe as we may have originally thought that it was going to be. Hey, that's another reason. So reason number one has to do with the fact that Moshe was punished by it. That's why Moshe's name isn't mentioned. That's why Hashem's name isn't mentioned. That's why the Jewish people are a little more hesitant. Reason number two, is not because Moshe was punished. It's because it was on the coattails of his sister's death. Whether it was officially Avelus, whether he just felt uncomfortable doing it. He didn't want to be singing with the Jewish people. He didn't feel it was an appropriate time. Reason number three is an astounding reason. And that is that it's a good thing that the Jewish people sang without Moshe. We want this. Right? When the Jewish people sang right at coming out of Egypt, it's because they didn't know how to do anything by themselves. They were very dependent. Remember, they were in a slave mentality. So they needed Moshe to get up and say, it's okay to sing. Let me teach you how to do it. Right? If you don't know how to sing, you need someone to teach you. If you're in a slave mentality, is it okay for me? Moshe says, yeah, it's okay for us to sing. By this point in the story, the Jewish people don't need Moshe anymore. It's a beautiful thing. They've evolved as a people. Don't forget, 39 years have passed. The generation that left Egypt is no longer the generation that's in this story plot. It's a much more independent-minded generation. It's a generation that's preparing to enter into the land of Israel. The fact that they don't need Moshe to sin, it's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. The Torah is giving us a little hint that this is a new world order. This is a new people. This is a much more independent people. This is a people that's ready. They're eager. They're anticipating their entrance into the land of Israel. Okay? All of these put together aren't so significant. But what I want to suggest is the following. Okay? I want to suggest that this song isn't really about the well at all. Okay? When the Jewish people are singing here, they're not singing because all of a sudden they had an epiphany. Wait a second. This great water, we should be singing toward it, right? What makes them have that epiphany? What makes them have that epiphany? They've had this well for 39 years. What changed? Rashi already told us. Miriam's death changed. The fact that Miriam died, the Jewish people don't have water anymore. All of a sudden they say, wait a second, when you don't have something, you appreciate it. Okay? So all of a sudden they had this well for all these years, right? They took it for granted. All of a sudden Miriam dies, and all of a sudden they appreciate that they have the well. And therefore they sink toward it. But I think it's a step further. Because I don't think it's about the well at all. I think it's all about Miriam. This entire song is all about Miriam. And I think we can therefore read the story plot as follows. And this is not my suggestion. I read it somewhere. I don't remember where. So you'll apologize. Miriam dies. She's buried quickly. And there's no mourning taking place. The Jewish people blow it. They blow it. Their leader dies. When they should be mourning her loss, what do they do instead? They complain. They're immature. They don't realize how much of an emotional toll that took on Moshe Rabbeinu. Miriam dies. The Jewish people are selfish. They say, Moshe, we don't really care because you're not a human being. You're our leader. We expect you to be superhuman. We expect you to always put us before your family. Now, that's not a revolutionary thing to be asking of Moshe. Miriam herself actually had the same claim against Moshe 2 weeks ago in the Parsha when she says, why aren't you being with your wife more? Spend more time with your family. And Hashem says, that's true for everyone else, but that's not true for my leader Moshe, who speaks to me pal pal, face to face, mouth to mouth, right? So the Jewish people, it's not unreasonable that they had that expectation of Moshe in this week's Parsha. Miriam dies. Moshe so desperately, and I think that's why it's significant that Rashi calls Miriam, I think Rashi somewhere calls her this, or maybe I read somewhere else, HaBechira. Someone refers to her as Bechira. Right, that she's the first, he referred to it. That's significant, that he referred to it as Bechira, his older sister. Moshe's older sister dies, and it's just a miserable, miserable moment for him. And the Jewish people, instead of saying, Moshe, take a couple days to yourself, take a couple days to recoup, to think about her, to mourn her, etc., the Jewish people immediately go into selfish mode. And they say, Moshe, the same way you've always put us before your family, we expect you to put us before your family now. They immediately go into complaining. After all, they need water. They're panicking now. Miriam's not around anymore. Who's going to give us water? Moshe, who cares about you? You got to worry about all of us. And immediately then comes right after that the story of Mamriva. Now, why is the story of Mamriva significant here? Because again, every commentator wants to suggest, what did Moshe do wrong? What did Moshe do wrong? What did Moshe do wrong? I think it's a very easy explanation, which is that Moshe reacts harshly and hits the rock because that's what he felt. Whatever you want to term it, there was anger. He never had the chance to mourn his sister properly. And therefore, when the chance comes for him to lose his cool, he loses his cool. The Jewish people at this point are grating at him in a way that they haven't grated at him up until this part in the Torah. They're grating at him not just because of the complaining, they've complained all along. What makes Moshe snap is the, again, this could all be kfira. I read it somewhere, I don't remember where. Why does Moshe snap here to the exclusion of all other times? Is because it comes in the aftermath of his sister's death. It's not just his sister's death, it's the way the Jewish people react to his death. Moshe just can't tolerate it. It's grating at him so much. It comes to the rock. Hashem says to speak to it. Moshe loses his patience, as many people would do after suffering such a devastating loss. He hits the rock. He tries to take the easy way out. And the punishment is what the punishment is. Therefore, let me finish the narrative of what I'm trying to weave together. That's why when Aaron dies, a few psukim later, what do the Jewish people do? They mourn for him. They don't only mourn for him a couple days, 7 days. They give him the full 30 days. They cry. They mourn. Kol Bei Yisrael. Why are they doing it? Again, I think it's in response to the lack of mourning that they did with Miriam. They see that Moshe and the Jewish people just need a period of mourning. And therefore, after that comes the singing of the well. What makes them sing at the well then? I don't think it's a singing to the well at all. I think that's their eulogy for Miriam. That's their way of coming to Moshe. Moshe isn't in the song because it's almost a song to Moshe. It's saying, Moshe, we're singing this song because only now do we appreciate what your sister meant to you and what your sister meant to us. And therefore, we're going to sing this song. It's not about a well at all. What's it about? It's saying, we appreciate what your sister meant to us. And it's almost, I picture it as Moshe sitting on the floor and the entire Jewish people coming around him, giving him nechama, giving him consolation, singing this song, saying, Moshe, we get it. We blew the opportunity. We put ourselves before your sister. We didn't allow you to mourn properly. We didn't allow you to put your family before us. So we're going to take a second out. And we're not just going to sing any song, but we're going to sing a song about a well, not just any well, but the well that was so closely represented by your sister, because only now do we appreciate who it is. This is why, I think this explains everything beautifully, by the way. This explains why Miriam's death is so succinct in the Torah. This explains why the Torah immediately goes from Miriam's death to the complaining, because the Jewish people put themselves before Moshe, so to speak. This explains why the sin of Moshe happens right afterwards. This explains why the Jewish people then mourned for Aaron when they didn't mourn for Miriam. It's not that they loved one more than the other. It's that they learned from their mistake. They saw Moshe's reaction to the lack of mourning by Miriam, and they said, now we got to mourn a little bit better. And this also explains the whole song in this week's Parsha, what it's doing here. Why didn't they sing 40 years earlier? They didn't sing 40 years earlier because they didn't have the sensitivity to sing 40 years earlier. They didn't know to sing 40 years earlier. Why do they sing now? The song now, it's not about the well. It's not about any of that. It's a song directed toward Moshe, and it's essentially a eulogy for Miriam, saying we get it, we know what Miriam brought to the Jewish people, we know what Miriam meant to the Jewish people. And I think in that light, not only does it weave everything together, but it paints a very humanistic side to the whole story. It's almost an unwritten dialogue taking place back and forth between Moshe, the Jewish people, about how to, you know, which comes first, basically, family or being a leader. Moshe has always felt that tug of war throughout the entire Torah. We can point to many instances where Moshe feels that tug between his family and the Jewish people. I'll give you a great example. Moshe's family doesn't come down to Egypt. There are a bunch of reasons given. One of the reasons is, why drag your family into it? The flip side is, okay, because his family wasn't into it, they missed the seminal points of Jewish history, right? Not living with his wife. Okay, all of these things, Moshe's always felt that tug of war. Many commentators point out that Moshe's children do not achieve, when you never hear about it. They're missing. They're empty. Aaron's children you hear about. Moshe's children you don't hear about. There's this unwritten tension between in the Torah about Moshe and his family. I think it hits ahead. It comes to, bam, hits you in the face in this week's Parsha with the death of Miriam. Moshe isn't allowed to grieve properly. He makes that sin. The Jewish people compensate with the song at the Be'er. Okay, that's, so to speak, section number one. I think it's really a beautiful idea. Section number two, and this is some...
I was going to say, he...
Sorry, yeah.
Also, though, because of his anger, because they've gone from the death of his sister straight to complaining, he hits the rock. He doesn't hit the people. He doesn't let his anger out.
Right, he takes his anger right.
On something which is inanimate.
Inanimate. Right, you almost get the feeling, again, maybe I'm being too human, you almost get the feeling that he loses it. The same way many people, if you go up to someone during Shiva, Chas V'Shalom, and you grate on them, they're going to snap. That's what people do. You're in a very emotionally charged, sensitive position of your life. And if someone bothers you, you don't have the patience that you usually have. But again, I think it just beautifully explains the whole song. I think this whole notion of familial relationships plays itself out in a different part of the Parsha. And that is if you look at Perek 20, Pasuk 14. I'm now going to shift a little bit. It's somewhat connected, but shift a little bit. So Perek 20, Pasuk 14.
That's Ravi. Yeah.
Says, Ravi. Okay? So this is, after Moshe sinned, the Jewish people are now beginning their charge, 844 in the art scroll, right at the bottom, the last word on the page. Okay? Actually, if you're looking in the English side of it, they started on the next page, 847. Okay? This is after Moshe sinned. The Jewish people want to begin their triumphant march into the land of Israel. There's only one problem. The most direct route means going through Edom. So what do the Jewish people say? They say, this is great. Right? We know Edom. We're going to ask them for permission to go through. And so what does the Pasuk say? Vayishlach Moshe Malachim. Moshe sends emissaries mi Kadesh, from where they are in Kadesh, El Melech Edom, to the king of Edom, Ko Amar Chicha Yisrael, so says your brother Israel, Ataya Data, you know, you know all the things that happened to us in Mitzrayim, we came out, let us go into your border. Edom says no. Okay? Edom says no. In the middle of the story, right as this whole dialogue is taking place, comes Aaron's death. That's in Pasuk 22. Aaron's death ends, and it basically goes back to the story plot with Edom again. So the whole question is, why does the story of Aaron break up the whole story of Edom? Okay? Again, they're talking to Edom. The language is striking. They send emissaries. They say, so says your brothers Israel. Let us go through. Edom says no. The story cuts to Aaron dying. End parentheses, Aaron's dead. They mourn, comes back to the story of Edom. Why does Aaron break up? Why does Aaron's death break up that entire story plot of Edom? So what I want to do is something similar to what we did before, which is read this pasuk with a different pasuk in the Torah. And that is the pasuk in Parshas Vayishlach in Bereishit. Give me a second. You don't have to turn back. I'll read it for you. I'd almost rather you to stay. But, you know, if you only have Bamidbar, you're in trouble. Okay, Vayishlach. Opens up Parshas Vayishlach in the following way. And compare this, again, with what I just read for you. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. Compare that with Vayishlach Moshe Malachim. Basically the same. You just take a word out. Lefanav El Esav Achiv. To Esav, his brother. Artsa Seir Sedei Edom. Whoa, wait a second. Both cases we're talking about Edom. Both places it starts Vayishlach blank obviously the name changes, Malachim. Okay? And it says, yeah, and in both cases, how does it refer to Esav? As Achiv, as my brother. So obviously there, Esav is actually his brother. But it basically plucks the whole language from Parshas Vayishlach into here. Basically a verbatim pasuk. Okay? Why is that significant? I think that's significant because when the Jewish people come to Edom in our Parsha and say, let us go through, we've been through a lot. And Edom says no, the Jewish people were basically saying, you're my brother. Right? We have a history together. In the same way you forgave me all the way back then, can you help me out a little bit over here? The Jewish people aren't just going to Edom because it's the most direct route. It happens to be the direct route. But they're also going because there's a relationship. They're appealing to their sense of history. They're saying, Edom, I'm not coming to you as a vacuum. I'm coming to you because our forefathers, when Yaakov needed a favor / to be forgiven, he came to his brother. He said in a certain way, the magical formula, sprinkled some dust. In the rest of Jewish history is beautiful, right? That's what they're saying here. They're appealing not to Edom in a vacuum, but they're appealing to them from a brotherly perspective. That's why you have the connection in the language, to connect the two episodes, to remind Edom, we're your same brother, just a couple generations. And that's also why it's why it says in our Parsha, Ko amar achicha Yisrael. So says your brother Israel. Because we want to create that relationship, that we're all family together. Why then? And Edom says no, by the way. Edom says, nice try, right? The dust ain't magic anymore. Okay? Why then does the Torah put in the whole Parsha of Aaron in the middle? Because Moshe and Aaron are inextricably linked. Why does Moshe get punished that he can't go into Israel? Why does Aaron die here to begin with? Why does Aaron die here? Why does Moshe not go into Israel? Because he hit the rock. Why does Aaron go into Israel? So it's a good question. The Pasuk says, if you look in Pasuk, Parak 20, Pasuk Yiral, so 2011, page 844. Okay? The Pasuk says, Vayara Moshe es yado, Moshe lifts his hand, Vayachet asela, Moshe commits the sin and hits the rock, B'mateo pamayim, Vayitsu mayim rabim, and the water comes out. Vayomer Moshar Adonai, this is this 12th Pasuk, El Moshe v'el Aaron. Moshe sins, and Moshe and Aaron get punished for it. Why? Because they're brothers. They're inextricably linked.
Aaron should have said to him, hey, we've been...
Exactly, Aaron should have taken... Whatever, however you want to formulate it. They were inextricably linked as the leaders of the Jewish people. One does a good thing, the other one gets credit. One sins, the other one gets punished for it equally. Hashem, you don't like that. Why don't you like that? I'm just reading Pesukim.
I understand.
You can't make it up. Hashem says, Moshe and Aaron, because the two of you didn't believe in me, the two of you aren't going to the land of Israel. 12 Pesukim later, Aaron dies.
Prove to me that Aaron didn't believe in me. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm telling you to.
I'm going to read a Pasuk. Hashem says to Moshe and Aaron, because you, not you as in singular, you as in plural, that's a plural word, hemantem, be, lachdisheni, because the two of you, lo taviu, I will not bring you, again, that's in the plural, ela etakahala zeh, you will not bring, you, plural, will not bring this people, ela arts shenatati lachem. That's all plural. Plural is not speaking, Moshe is not multiple people, Moshe is one person, the plural would be Moshe and Aaron.
Aaron's penalty is more severe than Moshe's. How do you explain that?
Why is Aaron's penalty more severe than Moshe's?
He dies.
So does Moshe.
Not Aaron dies.
Okay, Moshe's punishment is pushed off. So why is Aaron's death recorded right here? That's the real question. Okay. The answer is, I think, to contrast two forms of brother relationship. Okay. You have Edom. Jewish people come to Edom and say, you're our brother. Treat us nicely. Edom says, no siree. Right in the middle there, God says, contrast that with the brother relationship of Moshe and Aaron, which you can't get any intimate, then one sins, the other gets punished. It doesn't get any closer than that. But that basically means you're joined at the hip. That's why I think it's put in this right in the middle here. It's to contrast the two relationships of brothers. You have the relationship of brother of the Jewish people to Esav / Edom, where it goes completely wrong, where Edom misinterprets that relationship. Edom says, we're disregarding that relationship. And on the flip side, you have Moshe and Aaron, whereas one goes, the other goes. I think that's why all of these stories are, again, intertwined. Okay? Put this all together, everything we've said today, and what do you have? You have a parsha that's overlooked for a number of reasons. Not just because it starts off with the Parah Aduma, the golden heifer, and everyone never gets away from that, really. That's what people seem to dwell on. But number two is these aren't just story. The whole parsha is about family relationships. It's about Moshe and his sister. It's about Moshe and Aaron and his sister. And it's about the brother relationship, both in a positive sense and a non-positive sense. I could guarantee you that if I gave you 1,000 options for what our parsha is all about at the beginning of this class, not one of you would said it's about the inter-family relationships. I guarantee you wouldn't have said that. But I think that's an underlying thread throughout the entire parsha. Okay? Till next time.